You're listening to a Gravestone Production Podcast.
Welcome to our solar system. The year is 2373 Standard Earth Time. Humanity has colonized the planets and brought with them the omnipresent artificial intelligence known as Kestrel. Today, we dive deeper into Kestrel's memory banks to explore the worlds through her ears. Let us continue our journey now.
This is audio log number 4 for Operation Ghost Touch. I am Dr. Ryland. We have chosen a landing spot that looks like it will afford the maximum research opportunities. There's a small stretch of desert that is next to a forest and one of the nitrogen lakes. If you place base camp there, we'll have multiple opportunities to study the lakes and the forest, as well as we'll have an opportunity to leave on an expedition to the edge of the cross section. In our flyovers, we detected several of some sort of structural anomaly on the edges of the cross section and are making a priority expedition to get out there and study those. We'll probably do that in the first week or so of getting here. Kind of depends upon how much it gets sidetracked. Kennedy just touched us down by the sound of it, so let's go check this out. Okay, I've transferred recording to my helmet mic so I can keep my hands free. Kennedy is finishing up the report of landing and sending an update back to mission control. In the meantime, Senate and I are getting out there. You ready, Senate? Hell yeah, let's go. One small step for man. One giant leap for mankind. Yes, yes, I said it. I had to say it, Senate. It's tradition. The first steps of any creature, especially a human, which I am, are first steps upon unexplored territory. It is tradition to say the phrase. Each step further into space is an accomplishment for the entirety of our species. Yeah. The Vanarok gave us technology to do this. Whatever. You just sped up our time frame. What? Yeah. Oh. I totally forgot to calculate for gravity. I took a step forward and about just launched myself. For the log. Due to the small nature of the comet, while I weigh about 70 kilograms on Earth or Vanarok Refuge, I am far less here. Kennedy, what's that math? The one for gravity adjustment. They say I'm only about 4 kilograms here, which is why I can leap 20 meters up easily. Man, this is so cool. Okay, back to the mission, though. I am blown away with this comet. First off, I'm standing on a reddish soil that feels very similar to the clay on Mars and hold on, stop. Is that a lizard? Wait, no. Send it, don't move. That looks like a small lizard. It's about 10 centimeters long, and I think I scared him. He was sitting on this rock here, and I landed about 2 feet to the left of it, and he just scurried under it. Hold on, let me get my light. Oh my god, there he is. Yeah, he's about 10 centimeters long, has what looks like a scaly exterior, and he's a dark red in color, a little bit darker than the soil we're on. Whoa! Oh my gosh, this is so cool. He got a little defensive as I shifted to get closer, and he lit up the spines along his back, and he charged me a bit. Like, he's got little ridges along his back, and he lit them up like a firefly does. That's so cool. He's so cute. God, I just want to take him home. Wait, how do we get him out of here? Can we feed him? What does he eat? What are you, buddy? Oh my goodness, I need him. Come on out, little buddy. Let me look at you. I'm sorry, this is so cool. Okay, I ended up pausing the recording after that because I realized that continuing to record our journey would probably get really boring and really old fast, especially with no sort of visual of this. Plus, we'll have reports and stuff on our findings you can read rather than hear me gush about how cool everything is. I really need a better word, because I repeated it a lot when I was listening back to it. Anyway, I guess this is part 2 of Operation Ghost Touch Log 4. I just wanted to give an update on our findings. We found a lot today. Starting off with that lizard, it's got a small, diamond-shaped head, 4 limbs, although the front 2 are much larger and more muscular than the back legs. Based off of some observation of the creature after we let it alone and it learned we're not a threat, it actually hunts with its front legs. We watched as it quickly pinned a little insect in its front claws before it ate the bug. The tail is also surprisingly agile and active. It sweeps away its tracks with the tail, leaving a strange little swishing pattern in the dirt. Maybe it has to do with predators or something like that. I haven't quite pieced together why. We also learned that it has a defensive warning system that utilizes bioluminescence, which is absolutely incredible. It's this narrow ridge of spines which it can cause to glow a light blue light. I think it's the coolest thing, and because of that, we decided to name it a Zilladrake, because it's so cute. My biggest curiosity is if it's actually cold-blooded. I would think not, because there's no sun for this creature to warm up on, because this is a comet, and there's no sun. So, we've also encountered a variety of insect-like creatures. They all seem to be six-legged and have some sort of hard exoskeleton or carapace. Of the 4 different species we found, 2 of them were similar to beetles, 1 was a caterpillar, and 1 a moth, which we are suspicious to be the same creature, just at different stages of its lifetime. We also encountered a creature to be possibly a non-insect arthropod. Similar to the pill bugs back on Earth, it was rather interested in exploring the landing gear of the Trailblazer, but we just moved it a ways away. We've taken to calling those things corcopods. I don't know why I think Kennedy termed that phrase. In all honesty, we barely made it more than 60 feet from the Trailblazer. We spent most of the day-to-day setting up the base, including bringing out and setting up our portable lab tent. We'll continue to do cooking and spend most of our living inside the Trailblazer, but we decided to set up the lab outside to help ease studying the endemic life in its own environment. I'm worried that a shocking change in temperature would make it very hard to study the native species. So, yeah, this is Dr. Ryland signing off here, I guess. I'll make another one of these once I've got more to report. Okay, audio log number 5 of Operation Phantom Comet. It is day 9 of 30 on this rock. We have spent a few days exploring the forested part of this world, and it is weird, let me tell you. It's not every day you get to walk through a forest of completely alien plants that are a shocking purple color, and a floor of a deep bluish violet. It's truly bizarre in all of the best ways. Some of our initial discoveries of the fauna were tough. We heard a lot of evidence of local fauna in the forest, but we didn't see any for several days. I think it was day 4 we finally spotted what can only be described as a winged lemur. It has the body of a bird, the long tail of a lemur that ends in a feathered fluff. It's got large blue eyes and wings that, while feathered, are similar in structure to a bat's. Like, it's got hands on it, and it's got long lemur legs. But it also has a beak. They don't look light. Weight-wise, not in the way that bird bones are light, but I don't believe they need to be based off of the gravity of this planet. It's minimal, and these creatures can easily fly without it. They're unnaturally strong for the strength of gravity that this comet has. Traditional evolution theory accounts for the natural gravity of the comet as it develops. Doesn't really make sense with what is presented before us. It's confusing. We named the lemurs Senate lemurs because Senate is obviously in love with them and also spotted them first, so he kind of had dibs on that. We also encountered a creature similar to a Gengadra, or, what's it called on Earth? Deer. These things basically look like that, but contain a set of eyes underneath their regular set. The second set of eyes allows them to see infrared, and from the looks of how their retinas process this information, it's heat they're picking up. They didn't have a extreme reaction to the high heat creatures like us after a little bit, but they do have reactions to the other creatures that we found. It's these short dog-like creatures with double-jointed limbs. Like, each limb has two elbows. It also runs an extremely low body temperature. The only thing we can assume is that these special eyes on the deer-like creatures are there to detect the dog-like creatures. Kennedy thought the dog-like creatures were cool, if not creepy, so they got to name them Kennedy Hounds. We named the deer Caloroculus because their eyes. Our initial investigation of the flora revealed a variety of grasses and three different types of trees. Only one of these trees was a short, leafy tree. The other two were tall and coniferous. Strangely enough, all of them were flowering trees and seemed to produce nuts. I saw no evidence of pine cones, which is traditionally associated with the coniferous trees, but Senate lemurs were very interested in the nuts produced by the leafier trees. I've yet to name them, so they're still cataloged as coniferous 1, 2, and leafy 1, but their nitrous makeup is strange, and they have a very odd texture. It's very, very soft, almost like the bark is covered with a thick felt. And everything seems to have hair outside of the Zilladrake on this comet and a few of the insects that we found. I can only assume it's there for a little heat retention is needed on this comet, which would make sense why the plants tend to have hairs. I've ran more tests earlier today on some of the plants native to the area. They die rapidly when exposed to heat levels equivalent to those of Earth's. The climate of the comet runs an average of negative 200 Celsius. And these plants have adapted to that. Rather glad we landed the trailblazer on a rocky patch, because any sort of heat as high as negative 160 degrees Celsius will burn these plants. And here's what's amazing too. The plants contain chloroplasts, or their own version of it. But instead of exchanging carbon for oxygen, they exchange oxygen for nitrogen. Now, the atmosphere on the comet, as we discussed, is heavily favoring nitrogen, but there's still oxygen coming from somewhere. I did a study of one of the Zilladrakes we captured. The creature exhumes oxygen. It burns nitrogen. I'm going to attempt to bring a few of these creatures back with me for further study, and I've already set to converting one of our cargo holds into a possible cage for some of these creatures, hoping we can create a simulated environment of this comet that we can use to further our study of them. They won't survive on any of the planets or moons in our system off the top of my head. But this is a major discovery, and I am selfish, and I want more time to study this place, so. What is going on out there? I'll be right back. How do I put this? Bad news? Kennedy went out to explore some of the nitrogen lakes, take some photos, I guess. Senate said they pulled back up to camp in our explorer buggy and just collapsed out of the driver's seat. We've got them in their room, but they're running a fever and unconscious right now. They got bit by something. There's a hole in the glove of their suit and a wound on their hand. I don't know what. Bite, stab, like a stinger, I don't. We haven't gone to explore there yet. I don't know why they went to go by themselves, but they're feverish and their whole left arm is inflamed, which means there's a venom in them. I only have a limited understanding of survival care, and I'm no doctor, but this is most likely a venom that's never been seen before in our solar system. Hopefully they have a picture of whatever got them so we can go back and capture one, study what the venom is. Hopefully they can hang on long enough, but I don't know. We might have to abort the mission early, so I'll have more information later. Audio log 6 of Operation Ghost Touch, starting this log off with more bad news. Our urban communicator antenna has been destroyed by the local fauna. Senna and I had gone to the lake to see if we could find the creature that poisoned Kennedy. We captured a few things, but I haven't had a chance to analyze them yet, because when we got back to the ship, we found our Irwin antenna and other various parts of the ship were covered in the corcopods. They managed to chew through the metal in several parts of the ship and started eating a lot of the wiring. Turns out corcopods eat a lot of nickel, based off of the biopsy I did quickly on a couple of the dead corcopods. It turns out that the corcopods can be poisoned with trochium, which I found in the stomachs of several dead corcopods around our urban communicator antenna, which is both good news because we know what can rid us of the pests, and bad news because they ate the trochium in our antenna. One big problem with that is that trochium is one of the technomancy metals, meaning it is used in the mystic sciences, and our super-duper data-transmitting technology, the urban communicator system, requires that trochium to work. The Trailblazer contains no spare trochium wires, so we have no way to repair this antenna, meaning we are cut off from all communication except for our standard emergency radio transponder. I'll continue making these audio logs, but I won't be able to transmit them to Mission Control anymore. Fortunately, the rest of the ship is still operational, so we can continue the mission as normal, but if anything goes wrong, Mission Control will have no idea what happened. In fact, they probably already think something is wrong, which it kind of is, I guess. So I'm going to do some biopsies on the creatures we captured, and I'll hopefully have a better update when I've finished that. So, be right back, I guess. Further bad news here. I guess this is part 2 of log 6. It's been 2 days now since Kennedy got bit, or venomed, and Kennedy's gotten worse. They haven't woken up from their fever, their arm is still inflamed, and part of their chest and back are also becoming inflamed. Most importantly, their heart rate has slowed down, and I don't know why. I don't know what it is. I went through the creatures we captured, biopsied all of them. There was one venomous jelly-like urchin creature that resisted capture that I was able to figure out. It does have a venom on it, but it's not a venom I've ever seen. I don't know what it does yet. It's got similarities to the paralyzing agent of a Uranian Gasino. But I don't know what else. I need help studying this if I'm going to save Kennedy, which is part of the big problem of not having the Irwin communicator antenna working. I can't get in contact with Mission Control in any reasonable amount of time to have them kind of jointly working with my findings. So I've given them a counter-paralytic agent that I happened to find in the ship in one of the emergency medical kits. It's made to counter Uranian Gasino venom, which is good because there's some sort of similarity there, but I also don't know if it's going to work. I'm worried that if it doesn't, Kennedy's heart will stop in the next few days. I'm currently running a test to see how the proteins in the venom bind to muscle proteins in one of the local animals, and hopefully that'll give me a lead on what I could potentially use to counteract it. My only worry right now is that I don't have enough time to complete the research.
Hey, grab them. They're awake.
They're awake?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah, I'm coming. There will be a part 3 of this after I talk to Kennedy. This is part 3 of log 6. Kennedy was awake and lucid, surprisingly. I wasn't expecting them to be lucid, but they were able to identify what it was that envenomed them, and apparently it was the strange jellyfish-like organism that we identified earlier. It has a pair of stingers that it injects the venom with. The paralytic agent is a lot more obvious now, too. We found Kennedy has no movement in their lower left arm, and only a little bit of movement in their shoulder. Apparently, it hurts like hell, feels cold, and also they can't feel anything with it, which means there's some sort of numbing agency in there, too. So it doesn't look very good for them, which we had to have a very tough conversation with Kennedy about that. They said we continue the mission, though. They were strangely matter-of-fact about the fact that they could die any day now. They said this was an ironic way to go, stung by a strange creature when they were exploring a lake. I guess they've always just been looking up at the sky and space. But it was actually them who rationalized the conversation. Senan and I were in favor of aborting so that we can get proper medical treatment to Kennedy, and they said it didn't matter. If we leave and they die in the next few days, we will have to travel with a corpse for a majority of the journey home. If we stay, we can continue to study and learn and just hope that Kennedy can weather the venom. Neither Senna or I like the options, but I have to admire their dedication to the mission. Last thing Kennedy said before they fell back asleep was, "I got us here. You don't need me getting off the rock. Now go do your job." So that's exactly what we'll do. Kennedy is a strong one. Dr. Ryland, over and out.